Oh my God, Holly. She thinks I'm dead if I shut the door. Starts whining at the door. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Brothers in Song, the podcast whose penchant for nepotism is rivaled only by the Trump family. How are you today, Joe?
I thought you were going in a different direction, but that's I'm doing all right. Busy day, but happy to be here with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well now that it's the weekend. And, for those of you who may be wondering why the nepotism joke is because we have our beloved sister Anissa to join us on the podcast. Another avid music enthusiast, just like Joe and me. And say hello to everyone out in podcast land, Anissa.
Hi, everyone. I don't have the same musical chops as my brothers and kind of just fly by the seat of my pants when it comes to music. If I can dance to it, I usually like it. So, not formally trained, but here nonetheless.
Well, I mean, dance is a form of musical expression, and you did dance, not only for your own enjoyment, but with different groups throughout your youth and so forth. And you definitely got the dance genes. Whatever dance genes are in our family, you got all of them.
Speak for yourself.
Hey. Yeah, okay, Fred Astaire. And as we were getting ready for this podcast, I was thinking about, how Joe and I often shared music with one another because we shared a bedroom. But you and I, Anissa, being the two eldest siblings, and being very close in age, we had more of a musical rivalry, if I remember correctly. Do you remember anything about that?
I mean, I feel as though I instigated fights with you pretty much since the day I was born, because I was maybe bored or I wanted to get a rise out of you. But I certainly remember some heated discussions about Lionel Richie versus now, is it Kenny Rogers
Yes, it
or
was
Kenny
Kenny Rogers.
Loggins?
No, not Kenny Loggins, Kenny
One of the
Rogers.
Kennys, one of the Kennys. And I have no idea how that started, but I stand by my support of Lionel Richie wholeheartedly, maybe even more now. I don't know what you have to say for yourself.
I don't know how that started either. It was but like to be in our 40s and to say it out loud, it makes it sound even more ridiculous. But yeah, Anissa and I was on the side of Kenny Rogers. I thought he was awesome. She thought Lionel Richie was awesome. And for some reason in our young minds, like our 7 and 8 year old minds, we had them like locked in like mortal combat for music, just yelling and screaming at each other. Joe, where do you side in this epic music battle?
I would probably say Lionel Richie is a better singer. Kenny Rogers writes better songs.
Taking the diplomatic approach as always, Joe.
That's why I'm the favorite.
And I have one last musical memory, and I don't know if you remember this, Anissa. I don't know if you were present. I think you might have been, but I think our opposing musical tastes can be summed up by something I heard our mom say once, which is, Now, Daniel, you're a grungy, and Anissa, you're a homie, right?
She said that.
Yeah, she did. I distinctly remember this.
So she was trying to put us in these boxes.
Yeah,
Daniel's a grungy and I am a homie.
Was she saying that to you or to another person?
She said it
definitely wasn't Dad.
No, I was there. She said it to me. I just don't remember if Anissa was present also.
I don't remember that at all.
That's too bad.
Funny.
Too bad. Yeah. Hi, Mom. If you're listening, hi, Mom. All right. So on to the topic at hand here. We're going to be discussing an album that was in heavy rotation in Anissa's CD player. And that is the 1991 album Coolie High Harmony by Boyz II Men. And Joe, if you would be so kind, can you give us a little bit of background on this album?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Boyz II Men, this was their debut studio album. It came out in April of 1991. And for those of you who are unfamiliar, Boyz II Men was a R&B group that was coming up in the early to mid 90s. Nathan Morris, Juan A. Morris, not related, Sean Stockman, and Michael McCary. And I thought this would be a fun one for us to listen to with Anissa because she introduced me to this group because I didn't really know of them. And it played a pretty significant role in my childhood growing up, both at home and outside the house, because this music was everywhere. They were super popular. And I think what's really cool about this album, re-listening to it, because I had, you know, heard it so much but not listened to it closely in quite a while, is you can like hear the building blocks for the boy band like renaissance that happened in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, this is totally setting all that up. And it was super popular, super ubiquitous. But I gotta say, I did not remember some of the lesser known tracks on this one. So Anissa, what do you remember about this album from our childhood?
Well, I do remember listening to it, but I haven't in years, decades probably. So when I listened to it more recently, it instantly took me back to middle school. Like, it was just 100%. Like, I'm in seventh grade. Like, here I am. I'm at a school dance and I am in love. I am deeply in love. And the Boyz II Men are like explaining exactly what that means and what it sounds like. And it like defined romance to me. But I'm saying that from the perspective of a seventh grader who knows nothing about romance. So I think it was like voice. Oh, wow. His voice is really deep. And like all of their songs are like how much they love the girl and don't leave and just really sweet sentiments. I mean, not all of it, but like a lot of it, which was very different from a lot of the other music I was listening to, which, you know, would probably make you understand why my mother deemed me a homie. And that would be that my first CD was Dr. Dre, The Chronic. So it's like a very different take on like male-female relationships, like quite the opposite. And so, yeah, just when I listened to it, I was just like instant, like middle school dance, like crushing and like, I don't know, that was the feeling it evokes. I think it will always evoke. I don't know if you can really get away from that for me personally.
No, I had the same exact thought. I was like, oh my gosh, St. Francis Gym, middle school dancing. End of the Road was on heavy rotation at those things.
Well, and also I thought it's so hard to say goodbye. Like, yeah. Oh my God, so emo. For yes. Like a minute, like, oh my God, I'm at eighth grade graduation. It is so hard to say goodbye. It is so hard. Like, so I don't know. Like, I think because my like emotions and perspective around this are so immature that it probably takes away from some of the talent that is being showcased, which is maybe unfortunate for Boys to Men. But at the same time, I think that when people make music and it evokes like memories out of people, like that's also just a sign of success too. So I'm just saying that so they won't be offended.
Yeah, well, I hope that they get a chance to listen to our take on it. You know, it only sold 9 million copies in the United States. So, you know, I'm sure they're fine. Dan, I'm sure you've heard tracks from this, but had you listened to the full thing ever? And you probably haven't revisited it since it came out, right?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, my experience with Boys to Men is a lot different. And unlike a lot of pop and R&B music from that time period, I didn't hate them. but they weren't something that were like really on my radar. They were just kind of inoffensive to me, I guess. And I don't have the same sort of emotional connection to my past like you two do. So I'm just kind of like looking at it as an adult, as like an artifact from that time period. And as an adult listening to the music, I can definitely appreciate, you know, how skilled they were as vocalists. I appreciate how unadorned the vocals sound. Like, it seemed like the goal was to have the vocals remain just like really natural sounding, like you were in the room with them as they were singing. And I think that's in really stark contrast to the way that pop vocals are produced nowadays. And I don't know if the producers of this album, I don't know if it would have occurred to them to do anything else than what they did. But I do really appreciate, you know, the vocal talent that was, you know, on display in the album. And I think that's really the center of the whole appeal of them as a group.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure we'll touch on their specific style, because I think for the time it was definitely unique and something I don't think we had really heard before, because it was blending different styles in a really clever way, right? Because a lot of these tracks have like that R&B, that hip hop like rhythm underneath, but then it also has like doo-wop harmony. And then he even has like some jazz elements, which are really cool. And so to have that like amalgamation of sounds, I think that's why it resonated with so many people, because for no other reason than like you couldn't ignore it, because it wasn't anything you had ever really heard before. So let's get into some of the tracks, because, you know, again, there's probably three or four that are kind of really well known to a lot of folks of our generation. But Anissa, what are some of your favorites from this album, re-listening to it again?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday is probably my favorite. End of the Road as well. I think that I probably started listening to Boys to Men like after the hits came. I mean, which makes sense, but I think it could have been, I'm sure I was not like an early adopter. So my point is, I really remember their second album more, which is not really helpful in this conversation.
Well, like that has like On Bended Knee, I'll Make Love to You, all those good ones, right?
Right. I just love those. But I think out of this, yeah, like I wasn't like a huge Motown Philly, you know, like I just would say like, There is a documentary, or I think it might be an episode of the show on Netflix called This Is Pop, and it's about Boys to Men. I don't know if you've seen it, but you have seen it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, to your point earlier, a lot of boy bands came after Boys to Men. They were really the first one and kind of set the mold. But what was unfortunate for them is I think they were faced with like being the first one, and they came off like very clean cut because that's what the, you know, management thought would sell, and that was like safer. And I think that was kind of a turnoff for me. Like I liked their music, but it was also like, it wasn't like hard. It didn't go hard like some of the other stuff I was listening to. So that's why I was like, I like End of the Road and It's So Hard to Say Goodbye, because they're sweet and they're, you know, emotional songs, but you know, overall, like I was really gravitating to like harder tracks, if that makes sense. And they don't really have those, right? So, which is unfair, because I think they probably would have if they were given more liberty at like controlling their image and things like that. But you know, they had like the vests and the ties and the clean, you know, baseball cap, always whatever.
Always matching, coordinating.
Yeah.
Like, not like, oh, we happen to be like trying to have the same vibe.
Right.
No, we're gonna wear like identical jackets.
Yes. Just, yeah.
Or like the same color in different like in different formats. So, like, I'll have a red sweater. Well, I'll have a red button down. Well, I'll have a white shirt with a red tie. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Dan, for you, what tracks, I mean, I'm sure the ones Anissa mentioned you remember as well, but what other tracks were kind of some of the highlights for you?
I actually think maybe my favorite one is the opener, Please Don't Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one that I hadn't heard before. And it's interesting because vocally, there's a lot of improvisation and there's a lot of overlapping parts and things like that, but it's laid out over this great groove and bass line that I feel is just really solid and holds the song together. So that one was a real standout to me. For that reason, because I think it's really difficult to have all of those improvisations going on without a real like vocal hook or recognizable chorus to, you know, for listeners to latch onto. So I thought that one was really well done. And then the other song I really liked was Motown Philly. And I know that one is kind of, you know, just very emblematic of what Boys to Men is, but I think there's an underlying complexity there. And it's really not like anything you hear now or anything anyone else has really done. They've got these kind of jazzy and almost little dissonant harmonies over the hip hop sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a song that 30 years later has gone really underappreciated. And maybe that's because like nobody has dared to try to do that. 'Cause like, I mean, jazz is weird. And I imagine like singing jazz stuff is even weirder when you're trying to like harmonize with a group, because your ear and your instincts are going to be like all wrong. Like you have to know your shit. So if you asked me about it before I listened to it again, I would have said like, oh yeah, Motown Philly, that's a catchy song or whatever. But having listened to it a few times, I'm like, this is actually deceptively complicated. And I think it's really cool.
I 100% agree with you about Motown Philly. And to your second point on the harmonies, it's not only in this track, but throughout a lot of their arrangements, especially you can hear it in some of the acapella stuff, they sing in seconds, which is really a dissonance. It's not a harmony, it's a dissonance. And that's by design. And so when you fill all that in, it makes a really cool sound because they're in great tune, their tonal qualities match, and then you get that rub of dissonance, and then it kind of opens up into something that is familiar to anybody's ear. And, you know, the thing about Motown Philly for me is like, and this is linking back to the point that Anissa and I were talking about earlier, is that it is just reminds me so much of the early 90s, like, and like TV shows made for like young people, like, you know, middle school kids. Like I'm thinking of like TGIF, like, oh yeah, they would put in like Motown Philly, and I don't know, maybe Boyz II Men did like a cameo on one of those stupid shows at some point. I wouldn't be surprised, but like that song sort of encapsulates that time period so well. So I really like it as well.
Yeah, Joe, I agree with that comment as it relates to like the whole 90s vibes. I felt like some of the songs were, and I don't even remember their names because I felt like they were almost like demo tape-esque in that it just felt like exactly like what the 90s sounded like. Like you could have popped that into a sitcom and you would have been like, yeah. So I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but it just like some of them just didn't stick out in my mind because they just kind of all sounded like 90s music. I don't know how to say that better. And the other point I wanted to make just about like the track list in general, if you remember, you know, in the 90s, we weren't always buying CDs. We were very often buying cassette singles. That's so right. Some of these songs I probably never heard before because I don't know that I had the CD. I might have, but I surely would have bought a single. And it would have been the most popular songs. Yeah. And I think I kind of tried to like have a rule to govern my purchases whereby if you want more than two songs, you buy the CD. But if you only want two songs, you buy the single.
Yeah, so, real hard guess of who went to business school in this family.
Rules give you freedom, Joe. So anyway, just that's kind of a general comment on just what the re-listening experience was like for me.
No, I definitely hear you with that. And, you know, any music you listen to, you know, enough time goes by and it starts to feel like it is of that time for better or for worse. And, you know, I think that's why a song like End of the Road or It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday, those songs just have a more timeless feel, and they're not, because they're not using the, you know, the production methods du jour, you know, of that time that really date them. And I think those are why they remain, you know, classics.
Right. Like nostalgic, but not dated.
Ah, perfect. Yeah. That's a perfect way to sum that up.
Well, and that's being an asshole.
Here we go.
Well, I agree with all of you, what you just said, but it's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday. I'm pretty sure that's a cover from like the 70s. And End of the Road was written by Babyface, who is like an awesome songwriter. Mm-hmm. So I bring all that up to say Boyz II Men, awesome performers, awesome singers. But I think like their songwriting is very much like of the time and place in which they're creating all this.
Right. Well, and that's probably why I felt like some of those songs, like, oh, this is a demo. Like, this is not real.
Yeah. Right. Because they were like trying to operate in that system where, you know, for Black guys, there was a specific way that they were allowed to act, frankly, in that time. And they just had to operate within that system and try to create something unique and that represented them, and they did the best they could. And I think this is a pretty good representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So one other track that was actually my favorite one re-listening to this was Under Pressure. I thought that was just like musically, that one was perfect. And it had all those elements that I described earlier. It had like the hip hop beats underneath. It had like that recurring theme of the chorus, and then it had a melody over the top. And I think having like all three of those elements woven together created just a really rich sound. And I love that, like, one of the opening lyrics of the sound was like, you know, I call this girl and then she's never home. And it's like, when I was like, oh, I totally relate, because like as growing up, it's like, all right, I'm gonna call this person, I'm gonna do it. You call them and you have to like talk to their parents because that's the way the landlines work, and they're like, oh no, they're not home, can I take a message? And you're like, I don't know what to tell you. So that one was I like listening to that one.
Yeah, imagine not having access to everyone you know 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's like a difficult concept for younger people, maybe.
So I think we sort of touched on a couple things, but were there any sort of nitpicks that either of you had about this album? I mean, I've shared many of mine already, but that's just how I roll.
I have a couple, if you'll indulge me to go first. There were a couple of things on here that I could do without, and I don't think like any individual song was really an issue for me. But just a couple of general elements, like I could do without the talking, like the dramatization that happens. Girl, you know that I love you. Like all of the narration, especially.
Yeah, but that's not for you. That's for Anissa.
Yeah, I guess. You know, especially on that song Lonely Heart.
Yeah.
Michael, it's over. I'm like, yeah. Oh my gosh. And you know, I think it doesn't work for me because like the music and the delivery of the vocals is already like dripping with this like earnest sentiment, and then like having the melodrama of the speaking parts as well. Like you go from like earnestness into like real like cheese ball territory. So to me, that's not needed, but that's personal opinion. And then the second thing I have a problem with is I have big issues with the sequencing of the songs.
Yeah.
That's always a thing for me. And I think it's good that it starts off with Please Don't Go. I think that's a fine opener. And I think when they were putting this together, maybe they were thinking about, you know, two sides of a tape or two sides of a LP record. Mm-hmm. Because the first half is almost all the ballads, and then the second half is almost all of their hip hop inspired stuff. But I think if you're gonna listen to it as a whole, it would be better if they mix things up a little bit more. And the fact that you have to wait until like the sixth song for Motown Philly, which is like ostensibly the hit single, is really weird to me. But that's just those. So those are my gripes in a nutshell. How about you, Anissa?
I like music that I can dance to, and I also like lyrics. I pay attention to words. Words matter. And there's this one lyric that I literally had to stop, and I made a face at at my screen in my car. So I was like, what did he just say? And I did hear it incorrectly. But it was in the song Your Love. Mm-hmm. And it was something like aggressive and smooth. And oh. I thought he said, like the front of my face. I was like, what? But it was, takes the frown off my face. So, I mean, it's a fine lyric, I suppose. But when I thought it was aggressive and smooth, like the front of my face, I just was like, what? And I was going to have a real problem if that was the actual lyric. So I did write that down because it was just a head scratching moment. And I can't, I think he was singing it. I don't think he was saying those words. But I'm not 100% sure on that. And I think like I think, is it Sean? Is he the one with the really deep voice?
No, that's Michael.
It was Michael?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can say that again. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. Sean is like the tall one with the box haircut.
Oh, yeah. The skinny guy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't need any of that information, but so you could cut all that out. But wait, what was I going to say now?
The guy with the deep voice, Michael?
Yeah. Well, and so Dan, you made a comment about all of that extra ad lib. It probably wasn't ad libbing, but the talking and the spectacular deep voice of Michael. But I just remember like that really being like something that people really enjoyed. Like I remember him being like called out for that specifically. So I think that was like, I mean, for me, it's like, it is, I don't like hate it or love it, but I think people really liked that. I think that's why it kept happening in every album.
Yeah, it did. Well, I don't know how much, I think it was like, just to give him something to do, because he doesn't like, I mean, he's singing all the time, but he's the lower part, and it's probably just like laying down the bass line, however they arranged it. And so they wanted to give him something fun to do because he's not singing the melody. He's not doing like anything over the top that's like fun and exciting. And so maybe that's just a way to be a little bit more
involved,
generous for your bandmates, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's like, it's totally necessary for him to be singing bass to round out the sound. And you would notice it if it was gone. Like there would be something missing there, but it's not a, you know, that kind of stuff isn't, it doesn't grab the headlines. Like it's not all the like fireworks and stuff of singing lead in a group like that. So a totally necessary element singing wise, but I think I agree with Joe. Like they're trying to throw him a bone and let him have a moment or two.
Well, and I mean the other three guys were together first, and then they brought in Michael to kind of, and I think it was because they realized they needed to round up the sound. And I mean, you certainly hear them sing a cappella here on a couple of tracks, but if they didn't have that bass element, they couldn't really do that well. It would be really hard to do it. So, you know, It is what it is, but I think it's also, again, a product of the times of just, you know, in the 90s, that was kind of cool.
And then, just as an aside, Michael had a weird falling out with the other three guys who are, like, still together and making music and stuff. Like, he has MS, and then he didn't tell them for years, and then they were, like, questioning his work ethic because he didn't tell them that he had MS, and I don't know. It sounds like a terrible mess, and, like, you know, MS is a horrible, you know, diagnosis for anyone to have to be dealing with, but I don't know. It just sounds really unfortunate.
Well, hey, if the Fab Five can patch it up, I still have hope for Boyz II Men. I agree with both of your comments, Dan. The track sequencing certainly stuck out to me as well. So that was going to be the one thing that I want to just take a minute to mention. Were there any, like, minor things that we didn't hit on that either of you wanted to mention? I have one, and I don't know if either of you know the answer, but is this, like, the origination of the word, like, simping on somebody?
Well, it's funny you bring that up. That. Because, yeah, I was like, do they mean pimping? Like, were they just trying to, like, I was like, was that not okay to say or something? And then I, like, looked it up, and I was like, oh, no, that's a word. But yeah, I don't know.
We never used that word growing up, and maybe no. We were just out of the loop of, like, yeah. Cool slang.
That could have been the case.
Do you remember any of that? No, Dan?
I don't remember that. And I'd wondered it myself, you know, wondered about that term and what they meant by it. And I just really couldn't get a hold of anything. If any of our listeners know, feel free to send us a message on Instagram. Let us know, and we'll spread the word.
Let's do final thoughts. Dan, do you want to get us started?
Sure. So there are a couple things. First of all, I want to reiterate, and this is going to sound maybe a little bit weird to say, but this album has a very human sound, which I like. Again, like, the vocals are very, very much feel like, you know, just these people singing. There is some layering, but it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of, like, doubling or, like, plugins or, like, other weird stuff going on in pop music today. And I'm not anti-technology, but when you get used to that sort of, like, really produced and polished sound, and then you go back to something that's more spare and just focused on the vocalists, it's refreshing. And I'll just give a quick example. In End of the Road, there's a line that Wanya sings at the end of the second verse, and he says, this time instead, just come to my bed, baby, just don't let me go. When he sings that last line, his voice cracks a little bit, and they left it in. Like, they didn't have to do that. Presumably they did multiple takes anyway, so they could put together the best takes. But that's, you know, that's a pretty important decision. Mm-hmm. It's just a serendipitous moment that they decided to leave in. And I appreciate that, because they're, like, embracing the unpredictability of creating music. And I don't think that would get left in if they made that album today. But it's so much, it's so human, and there's so much emotion behind it. And it's a little moment that adds a lot to that song. So overall, that's one thing I really appreciated about this. And, you know, the other thing was, it's just really interesting to me how they kind of made two big hit albums with, like, 10 hit singles. and they just kind of fell off the face of the earth. I mean, they continue to make music and presumably like tour, and they have people who go to their shows and stuff, but it's just so weird how they've kind of fallen out of our cultural memory. And in that way, I think they're very underappreciated, Boys to Men. They deserve to have like some kind of a comeback moment or something.
I think they might actually be on tour this summer.
Field trip.
That's yeah. Right. But I think your sentiment, if you didn't watch that episode of This Is Pop or whatever that documentary was, like that's basically the sentiment, that once all these other boy bands started, and I don't know if there was some infighting like you alluded to earlier, or if that happened after, but you know, I think they kind of got pushed out of the genre that they essentially created, which is sad. And they, I feel like they did a lot more organically than, I mean, NSYNC or Backstreet Boys, or, I mean, there were others even before them. But I think if you compared like the talent, you know, I think Boys to Men, just the timing was like all right, but also all wrong at the same time, if that makes sense. For the, you know, they had that little run, and then, you know, whereas I think if they came in the later 90s, I think it would have been a different situation.
Yeah, I think you guys are both right. And not to turn this into a boy band podcast, but like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, those were the three biggest ones that I remember. And they're kind of just all replicas of each other, where Boys to Men was a one of one. And like there was New Edition, and there were other like all men, like doo-wop groups and stuff like that. But just the creativity to blend hip hop, R&B, jazz, and put it all together in the way that they did, I think we had never seen anything like that before. And so the fact that they kind of they did a lot of the heavy lifting for those other boy bands that I mentioned, and in This Is Pop, the Boys to Men effect, which is what Anissa was talking about. It's called the Boys to Men effect. And like, it did. It just paved the way for these guys. And like, I don't think a lot of people appreciate that was not an easy thing for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And this album is pretty cool. Listening back to it, you know, gosh, I mean, it's 35 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I think you're definitely right about using that term heavy lifting. And I think it is worth mentioning that, you know, arguably the three most popular boy bands of the, you know, the following decade, you know, NSYNC and 98 Degrees and Backstreet Boys, they're all white guys, you know, and there is unfortunately a musical history of Black Americans doing something first and then having white artists be able to cash in on it afterward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, there were other successful, you know, Black boy bands, you know, after the fact. But, you know, I don't think any of them really approached the kind of monetary success and popularity as, you know, as the white ones. And I think that's worth mentioning.
So I think we've done it. Thank you so much, Anissa, for making your podcast debut with us.
Is this Yeah, it is. Thanks for having me.
Maybe next time we can have all four of us on a podcast.
though. I think the only music that Pete listens to is Bare Naked Ladies, so we don't have on board with that.
We'll just mute him. Sorry, Pete.
Dan, it's your choice next. So what do we have on the docket for our next episode?
Okay, so for our next episode, we're going to be staying in the 90s. And all I'm going to say is Wu-Tang Forever.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, friends, for joining us tonight. We really appreciate you. And we'll see you here next time.
Take care, everyone. Brothers in Song is written, created, and produced by Joseph Collin and Daniel Collin. Edited by Daniel Collin. Our theme music is by Iconograph. For the latest news, follow us on Instagram @BrothersInSong.